I don't believe, frankly, that the Articles of the Creed place the heaviest burden on our faith. I believe the heaviest burden on our faith is believing in the providence of God. Revelation tells us that the providence of God is His eternal plan by which He governs the whole universe and every last and least creature in it toward the fulfillment of His whole wise design. So then, we are to believe that nothing in the world ever just happens. Nothing ever happens. The very verb from which it is derived comes from pagan sources. To be exact, from pagan fatalism. Nothing merely occurs. Everything in the world at large, from the constellations in the heavens to our own little world, has a purpose. The heat today, believe me, he followed my natural and supernatural bent. Naturally, I've convinced myself the way to heaven is through mortification. The heat today is mortifying. Supernaturally, I've made it a law in my preaching life never to preach away from the Blessed Sacrament. But I figured part of God's providence, and I hope you agree, is that He would be more pleased if we met in this refreshingly cool parlor. There is no such thing as chance with God. Chance is our own human word to describe our ignorance. There are no such things as mistakes with God. Memorize this. God never makes a mistake. We make them. We do wrong. We commit error and even sin. Never God. Is sin part of God's providence? Yes. Are our mistakes part of God's providence? Yes. Are the sins and mistakes of others part of God's providence? Yes. The wisdom of God and the goodness of God enable Him to draw good. Faith even tells us greater good out of the very evil that we human beings perpetrate. In His loving wisdom, therefore, God has a purpose for everything in our lives. The people we meet, the ones we just missed. No, we didn't. God made sure we would. Then there are the persons we live with. Talk about faith. In the Society of Jesus, there is only an 8-day postulancy, and then begins the novitiate. All I know is My mother was a widow, never had any other children besides me. When she was exasperated, she told me, "One is enough." But I missed brothers and sisters, and I looked forward to the thrill of living with other live human beings, more or less my age. Did I ever learn fast? What I'd been looking forward to, in less than 2 weeks, it dawned on me how different people can be, what characters God created. Lord, not this. There is a reason for the temperament and personalities that we deal with. All of their differences, what we call their eccentricities. God could have kept any person from being eccentric. You know how? By making everyone a carbon copy of ourselves. But what a boring and dreary world that would have been. Thanks, Lord, for the eccentrics. I think we have time, and besides, this is the atmosphere in which to relax. Some years ago, I was asked to give a retreat in Cincinnati to a community of sisters, to be exact, the Sisters of Charity. When I arrived there, I met a Jesuit confrere of mine who was also giving, it looked like, the same retreat. Was it possible that the superior made a mistake and got two men for one job? But it turned out that the superior general had called him up about a month before and asked if he wouldn't mind giving a retreat to the exotics in her community. So we asked, well, who are the exotics? Well, those are the difficult characters in the community. And they've decided to have a retreat all by themselves. He told her mother, is there another retreat? Yes, there's a group of the regulars. Well, he said, either I give the retreat to the regulars or get somebody else. She promised. Then she wrote to me without making the distinction. One of the great retreats of my life. The regulars made their retreat in chapel. The exotics made theirs in the little theater. And I gave the retreat. I stood on the stage. They sat in soft reclining cushion chairs. God puts exotic people into our lives. The very word character has a rich meaning. There's a reason for the fact that we were born when we were, in this age, in a particular country and city, of just these parents. Everything is part of God's eternal providence. Our parents didn't chance to meet. We didn't happen to be born. All of that was planned by God. We are further to believe that divine providence is the normal way that God shows us His will. What long reflection, days and months of study, consultation, reading of books, people will engage in to find out what is God's will. And often all they have to do in most cases is relax, look around, be honest with God and themselves, and tell themselves, oh, this is it. No book of Scripture is ever so specific. No writing by a master of the spiritual life is ever so detailed as the circumstances into which God's providence places us here and now by His manifest will. The great mysteries of faith, like the Trinity and the Incarnation, or the real presence, are to be believed in, of course. But I honestly believe, living with myself and dealing with so many souls, that for most of us, these mysteries do not as constantly and as demandingly enter our lives as does providence, where we are bidden to see God's purpose in the rain outside, or what my notes don't say, the heat outside of this room, or my feelings inside, to see God's purpose in the person with whom I happen to work, or the chance telephone call when I'm just ready to leave the room. God is behind every breath of wind, behind every feeling in my body, behind every face that looks into mine, whether it smiles or frowns, behind every kind word I hear, behind every rejection or unacceptance, or maybe insult I receive. It wasn't he or she who smiled or frowned or was kind or insulting. Behind that human face, faith tells me, was God. God then is behind the pain in me and the hurt inflicted on me. All I can tell you, your lives are changed permanently. Once you grasp the meaning of this mystery, that's our faith and the first lesson of Bethlehem. The second level of our reflections is on trust in the Lord's providential wisdom. Faith in God's providence is only the beginning, but we are also to trust in the Lord's providential wisdom, even as Mary and Joseph trusted in what they were called upon to do. And the circumstances in which they found themselves were that very calling to what they were supposed to do. Joseph simply got up, left Nazareth, and went to Bethlehem to register. It's just as well that Luke was not writing one of our modern novels. He would have spent at least 30 pages describing Joseph's feelings. Mary need not have, absolutely speaking, come along with Joseph. He was the legal head of the family, being the head of the house of David, only his presence in Bethlehem was required. But it was the prudent thing for Mary to do, to go along with Joseph. Or perhaps more accurately, to have Joseph be with her. She is not for nothing called Virgin Most Prudent. Here we have the key to trusting in the wisdom of Providence. It is the prudent thing to do. So what is prudence? Prudent is doing what God's providence shows us we should do. We know, we have lived long enough to know. Now, this is more easily said than done. Naturally speaking, each one of us has his or her own idea. We have our plans, our projects, and our designs. And a large part of trusting in God's providence is to lay aside our plans in favor of what God seems to want us to do. From all the evidence, when the angel appeared to Mary at the Annunciation, this was the last thing she expected. Leave it to God. It is not only in nature, by the way, as I'm sure you know. There are no straight lines in nature. There are also no straight lines in God's providential grace. God will do what for us is the unexpected. Not this, we say. Not today. Not now. And how many failings in virtue we commit for failure to see God's wisdom in what we did not expect. When the angel appeared to Joseph again and told him to take Mary, already with child, as his wife, Matthew makes it very plain that Joseph already had other plans. When Mary's days for her to be delivered were approaching, to leave home and go to a strange and distant city was not in either Mary's or Joseph's designs. We can therefore say with complete security, expect the unexpected of God, and you will not be disappointed. It doesn't mean that God does not want us to make plans, or to anticipate, or that we should be careless or thoughtless. Do that. But after we have made all the plans and designs and filled out all the details of our own blueprint, either of our lives in general as of today, or the next hour in particular, isn't it true how often God changes them? How constantly he is stepping into our lives and changing our plans. We speak of God as writing in crooked lines, and he certainly does. The secret, then, of living a holy life like that of Mary and Joseph is to trust implicitly that God knows best. Thus our faith is twice tested. Once by our abandonment of what we had planned to do, and once again as we undertake what God tells us we should do, when often we feel so unprepared. But once the will of God becomes evident, we change our plans, revise our itinerary, adjust our ideas, and we put aside, which is the hardest, our hopes and our desires to rely on God. Often we are groping This is not my plan, we tell the Lord. And the answer is, yes, I know, but it's mine. Trust me. Finally, besides believing in God's providence and trusting in God's providential wisdom, we are to resign ourselves to His provident care. As we should expect, God's providence not only places demands on our faith to believe that He has a purpose in everything in our lives, even though so often we don't see the purpose. That's what faith is all about. Nor does it mean only placing demands on our trust, to rely with childlike confidence in the Lord's wisdom that He knows better than we what is most for His glory, our own good, and the salvation and sanctification of souls. But finally, His providence also places a heavy burden on our generosity. It can call from us the hardest sacrifices of our lives. We read in St. Luke's Gospel that when Jesus was born, Mary wrapped Him in swaddling clothes. In my earlier quotation, I was using the Vulgate, which, as you know, is the original Latin translation authorized by the then Pope Damasus I and the only translation officially approved by a general council for secure use by the Catholic Church. In the Latin text, which is the authentic text for the Bible, Mary's wrapping Jesus in swaddling clothes says she wrapped Him in ponies, P-A-N-N-I-S. They are torn pieces of cloth, otherwise known as rags. The correct rendition, therefore, is, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in rags. We are further told that she laid him in a manger. I'm sure we all know enough French to know that manger is a poetic expression for trough, or the box from which animals are fed. So she wrapped him in rags and laid him in a trough. We are finally told that Jesus was born in a stable because there was no room for them in the inn. It doesn't really matter why there was no room for Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. But this is the way that God provided for His Son's visible entrance into the world. The world was not ready. There was no room for Him when He came. Jesus, Son of God, teach us to understand the mystery of divine providence, to trust blindly, that's not too strong an adverb, blindly, in God's wisdom that He knows best, and above all, give us the grace to abandon ourselves entirely to be used by You, as You will, being sure this is the secret not only of happiness in this life, but of such success and achievement in being used by God as no one else has a right to expect, except the person who always says yes to God. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Thank you.